Here are four principles for living like an American. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for every gift and opportunity. Become a source of love. Once again, these are the times that try our souls. We must find the strength and the courage to rise up to refound America in the spirit of liberty. Hello, my wonderful, wonderful audience. This is Dr. Peter Breggin. I think you may already be looking at Dr. Peter McCullough, and a dear friend, a brilliant man, the greatest scientist in COVID-19, barring none. You're watching or listening to Refounding America, Reclaiming Ourselves. We are on Brighteon TV, and it's real TV, folks. You can watch us on Roku on your TV set if you want. And it's also on the radio, top 1% of internet radio shows broadcast it at prn.live. I'm really looking forward very much to this interview with Dr. McCullough. This man has more truth, I'm afraid, than the rest of the medical profession. Maybe a few people are close to him, but overall, more truth here than in the whole profession. It's going to be a very worthwhile meeting tonight. Well, welcome back, wonderful people, to Refounding America, Reclaiming Ourselves. I'm Peter Breggin. You're looking at Peter A. McCullough, MD, who has a new book out, The Courage to Face COVID-19. I've got a copy, but I think we can put it up. Yep, it's gone up. It's a wonderful book, and it covers a lot of good people, and it, including Dr. McCullough, and what they've been doing, to fight for medical freedom and common sense and in medicine today. He's very sweet. There's a chapter in there about me, called The Conscience of Psychiatry. That pleased me. I have to admit to it. Pleased me no end. We haven't talked on the air in a long time, and not enough in person. How about, let's spend these two, there are two sections here, about 22 minutes each, just having you debrief, explain, talk about all that you think is important right now that's going on in the whole area of health, just not even just COVID-19, there's so much going on. So I give it over to you, Dr. McCullough, who, by the way, folks, is an internist, has got an MPH, is an epidemiologist, is a cardiologist, has published 600, or wow, now it's probably over 600 peer-reviewed journal articles, and somehow I think he's got about 60 articles now on COVID. I don't know how he had the time to do that one. And he sees patients. He sees patients with COVID, and he sees patients who are trying to recover from the after effects of COVID, and also, I imagine, the vaccines. So I'm going to be quiet now.
Well, thanks so much for having me back on the program. You know, as a practicing internist and cardiologist, I really have a feel of the pulse of the nation. And, we are getting disturbing report after disturbing report coming from all sectors that multiple disease categories are on the way up, not going down. Most worrisome is all-cause mortality. All-cause mortality is skyrocketing from 2020 to 2021. And, here The leading cause of death of these new deaths is actually unknown, not listed. And I can tell you as a doctor and someone who's been following this for a long time, when someone prior to COVID-19, when someone passed away and you'd open up the papers or see the mention on the news or in clinical practice, the typical vignette would be, you know, someone had a long battle with cancer, or someone had a long battle with heart disease, died after complications of a heart attack, or, you know, motor vehicle accident, suicide, homicide, drug overdose. There's some explanation. There's some explanation. In general, prior to COVID, 40% of deaths were due to heart disease, 40% due to cancer, and 20% due to other causes. But now we're hearing reports, for instance, in the province of Alberta, Ontario, the leading cause of death is unknown.
Oh, my.
And we're hearing report after report of people dying of unknown causes. In fact, there's now a new disease called sudden adult death syndrome, where it's described as a mystery. People just die for no particular reason. And the only new thing that's been introduced into the population in 2021 from 2020 is COVID-19 vaccination. And the vaccines used in developed countries are genetic vaccines. They are the genetic code that is designed to have the body produce the Wuhan spike protein. The spike protein was engineered in the biosecurity lab level 4 in Wuhan, China. Papers by Vineet Menachery and Ralph Barrick, published in Nature and the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science in 2015, clearly elucidate this, that the spike protein was engineered to invade a human respiratory system. And we have now, abundance of information, over 1,000 peer-reviewed papers showing the spike protein damages the brain, damages the heart, the immune system, the blood system, at least one solid paper suggesting it could cause cancers of particular cancer lines. This is the most disease causing protein that I've ever seen in my career.
Well, that is amazing. I really don't have questions. I'm sort of just sitting here happy to have you continue and tell us more and more about this. I mean, the reported deaths are so out the ceiling. Never had anything deaths reported to either the CDC or the FDA like the deaths here.
Well, what we know is that there are clear calls for removing the products from the market. The World Council for Health, June 11th, 2022, produced a pharmacovigilance report. They looked in all the databases. There's 39 safety databases worldwide. They focused on four big ones: the US CDC VAERS system, the UK Yellow Card system, the EU EUDRA system, and finally the WHO VigiSafe system. In those systems, the governments running those systems are certifying more than 40,000 deaths that have occurred shortly after taking the vaccine, typically within a few days. From a regulatory perspective, any death that occurs within 30 days after a new product is due to the product, period. There's no discussion. There's no causality that needs to be proven. Now, they have concluded that this is grossly underreported, that these deaths may represent only 1% of what's really going on. And all the prior precedents of products that have come out and been associated with death have been pulled off the market after just a handful of deaths. There's a few examples of drug products where there were hundreds of deaths that accrued. But this case is far beyond any line in terms of death. And the governments appear to be willfully blind. How do we know that? Well, under court order, Pfizer had to release its dossier of what did they know about their vaccines after it was shortly released. Pfizer was released in early December of 2020. Shockingly, Pfizer knew about 1,223 deaths within 90 days of release of the vaccine. People were calling into Pfizer, telling them that their loved ones had just died with the Pfizer vaccine. Pfizer had hired 600 employees to man the phone lines as people were calling in with their loved ones dying with the Pfizer vaccine. The lawyer for the FDA wanted to block the release of that dossier to Americans for 55 years. That is prima facie evidence that the FDA is involved in an active cover-up of a mortality problem on a large scale, at least with the Pfizer vaccine. Now we have word the Moderna dossier is now under pressure to be released. Last week at the crony capitalism meeting in Washington, in the Hillsdale unit, and this was sponsored by the American Conservative. By the way, Eventbrite, that handed the tickets, tried to sabotage the meeting, but it still went on, and we had the major press there. Senator Johnson made the point that 80% of the deaths and complications are limited to specific lots of the vaccine. And Johnson has a manufacturing background. Johnson is saying that is, again, evidence of a manufacturing problem. If all the complications are restricted to certain lots, that is the start of the investigation. What is unique about those lots that is resulting in death and injury where other people take the vaccines and there's no problem? And then the most recent development was a survey done by Zogby. Zogby is a very reliable survey company. They surveyed a large number of Americans, 2/3 of whom took the vaccine. And shockingly, 15% of those who took a vaccine have a new medical illness, a blood clot, heart damage, headaches, tinnitus or ear ringing, an immune system or autoimmune problem, joint aches, small fiber neuropathy. They're not the same. I can tell you these people have an enormous regret from taking the COVID-19 vaccines. And what every American wants to know is, when is this nightmare going to stop?
Do you know of any major media that has covered the Pfizer papers other than the New York Post?
The leading periodical that's covering this entire story is Epoch Times.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, they're the lead. And the other major media, again, are willfully blind to these developments. When I testified in the Texas Senate on June 27th, 2022, I brought up the World Council for Health Pharmacovigilance report. And one of the questions that I was asked by the chairwoman, Senator Colquart, she said, well, what does the FDA and CDC say about the World Council for Health report? I said that they're willfully blind. People are turning a blind eye on purpose to any information on vaccine safety. That is making Americans and people worldwide so uncomfortable. There are now videos in bridges across rivers in the major European cities. You know, most European cities have beautiful bridges and the rivers wind through the cities. And there's giant poster boards, almost like an art show. But instead of showing fine European art, there's the pictures of loved ones who have died after the vaccine. It's almost as if people are posting pictures of their loved ones lost at war. I mean, these pictures will be burned into history. The world is outraged. There's been worldwide protests from Australia to South Africa, South America, Europe, Canada, United States. There's outrage. And then we see fracturing. We see fracturing of governments. Let me give you an example. One of the patients in my practice, one of my very first myocarditis cases, was a young man from Costa Rica, Well, in the last week, Costa Rica has just had a new president, new regime. His first action, drop the vaccines and drop the mandates.
Wow. That's very, very good news. When you talk about turning a blind eye, one of the most extraordinary things was just within, I think, the past month, where in response to freedom of information, the CDC said, oh, we're not paying any attention to our VAERS reporting system for the vaccines. That is one of the more bizarre and outright, again, it's immoral beyond belief. It's just incredible.
The VAERS system is, by definition, an early warning system. You know, it doesn't assign causality. It doesn't have sophisticated features to it, but it has a clinical vignette. We know in a paper by Meisner and colleagues, 86% of the reports to VAERS are done by doctors, by coroners, by paramedics, nurses, people who think the vaccines cause the problem. Last week, I did several VAERS reports for my clinic. I did the reports because I think the vaccines have caused the damage to the body. That's the reason why I'm doing the report. I have to have the vaccine card. I have to put all my information in, my office address, my contact information, the patient's information, patient's email, patient's phone number. And these forms have to be honestly completed, that if I falsified them, that's punishable by fine or imprisonment. I mean, these VAERS reports, and right now on the U.S. ledger alone, VAERS is telling us that 13,000 Americans have died shortly after taking the vaccine, the majority within a few days, that we've had hundreds of thousands of ER visits, urgent care visits, hospitalizations due to vaccine injury, thousands of cases of heart damage, myocarditis. I mean, these are stunning numbers. Let me give you another one that's in the peer-reviewed literature. I was stunned with this paper by Berhild and colleagues in JAMA. And it was a report from three Nordic countries, three small countries. They are reporting within 28 days of taking a vaccine, Pfizer, Moderna, or AstraZeneca, within 28 days. And they strictly excluded anybody who got the infection. So this is just purely the vaccines. This number blew me away. 7,750 major intracranial hemorrhages, strokes, or neurologic catastrophes. Can you imagine in three small countries, there's now 7,750 new neurologically devastated adults? I mean, yeah. Dr. Bragan, these numbers are jaw-dropping.
Folks, they really are jaw-dropping. I mean, in the past several years, one vaccine's been taken off the market temporarily for suspicion of contamination that might hurt someone, and it was cleared. But that was a suspicion that might hurt one person. You know, H1N1 was taken off the market because of a severe neurological problem in a couple of dozen people. And then along the way, it was found to have also killed, I think, about 50 maybe. And this was considered just beyond belief. We kill that many every day, and we have neurological injuries galore. I mean, making these other vaccines, well, it makes all other vaccines look like a miracle compared to this one. And this is a horror story. And well, the cover-up, just amazing.
Well, with this degree of injury, if you go to any group setting, everybody knows somebody who's died after the vaccine, and they clearly know people have been injured, and you don't need, you know, public health reporting, you don't need peer-reviewed literature. People talk to people. And I can tell you, I've given public presentations in virtually every state in the country. I gave a large one yesterday in Texas. There's no one celebrating these vaccines. No one. There's no vaccine rallies. There's no Moderna gala events, Pfizer gala events. No one is celebrating these vaccines. When the large companies are still declaring vaccine mandates, no one knows who's responsible for making that decision. You know, nobody comes out as a forward-facing company representative and said, I'm responsible for making the decision for these vaccine mandates. Nobody knows who's making the decision, you know, whose idea it was, why they're doing it. Some companies, some large companies have some mandates, other companies don't. The behaviors right now can't be explained. Do you know there's some large companies that are in the financial services sector, for instance, they're still not back in the office. In Washington, you know, there are many government service agencies, government agencies, they're still not back in the office. I recently had a patient in my office, a young man. He had just gotten the job of his future career with a large financial services company here in Dallas. They have a beautiful technology center. It employs and has offices for 6,600 employees. I know it very well. This is state of the art. I looked at his address. It's right near the building. I said, boy, you must love this new job. You just finished college. You're going in. You're seeing people in the office. How great is that? He goes, oh, no. He goes, we're still at home. We're still on WebEx. I said, look, we're into our third year of the pandemic. What do you mean you're on WebEx? He goes, well, you know, it's thought to be unsafe that we go back into the workplace. And I said, well, aren't you going out to the bars and the restaurants at night and seeing everybody? He goes, oh, yeah, we're doing that. So what we're seeing is a culture of fear that doesn't make sense. So the companies that are fearful of having employees come back are the ones who tend to be mandating the vaccines. But yet the people who work at these companies go out to crowded restaurants and bars at night. You can see that right now nothing makes sense.
No, I mean, what we've been exposed to, we just, you know, Ginger and I describe it in COVID-19 and the global predators. It's just a concerted effort, I believe, to suppress the Western democracies, to especially the Westerns, to crush them. Because the one thing the globalists have always said stood in their way, really the only thing, were patriotic democratic republics where the citizens would want to take care of their own financial stability in the country, their own health, and do a much better job than some globalist can do. And America was the leader of the independent, God-fearing, which also sets people apart from globalism. They have a higher value system. And they're out to destroy us and confuse us and baffle us. It's very systematic, and we have to fight back by restrengthening our democracy. We absolutely have to do that in the coming elections and then in the ones after that. I mean, that's right now what must be done. We got to recapture the House and the Senate. But it's just incredible. But you're mentioning things that are hopeful, and we're seeing hopeful things going on as well. We did stop those amendments that the Biden administration was going to make, folks. You probably, if you're watching this, you've probably heard about it, but we did in late May, a coalition of us stopped the Biden administration from pushing amendments through the World Health Organization regulations that would have made the World Health Organization a dictatorship that could, for example, declare that we have a monkeypox global or possible global, or maybe even we think maybe a global health crisis brewing. And he can't do that. He can't do that now. He can't just focus on any one country and tell them what to do and so on and so forth. But they're aiming for that. And the administration is aiming for that. They just got popped on the nose a little. So there's just a lot going on, and it's a lot about tyranny and destroying democracies and the corruption of the politicians with their ties to China, which is one of the communists, and to make money, which is one of their big sources of income among the globalists, the Chinese market. And it all ties together, and there is actual sense to it. You know, learn about it.
There's no doubt about it. We've had a series of destabilizing events, and it's been going on now for several years. Each one of these events or these movements, they tend to create a tremendous amount of strife, confusion, and then there appears to be a progressive stripping of civil liberties. And, you know, the most recent pretext or context of this is actually a global health emergency. And so for the World Health Organization, which in a very aggressive move late 2020 and 2021, 2022, they wanted worldwide authority to declare emergencies within countries and to start to organize global responses. You know who saved us on that was the Equatorial African countries. They said, we're not going to go along with this.
Yeah.
And of interest, those would be the ones that actually, you know, potentially could benefit from more public health technology. Yeah. What I've said is that in the United States, under no circumstances could the WHO enhance our healthcare. Healthcare is always private between the doctor and the patient. It's locally administered. The community standard of care is defined by doctors in the community, not by government agencies, and certainly not by the World Health Organization. But I don't think this is the end. I think they're going to come back for this. It's clear.
We got to finish now, Peter. We can come back on this subject as we return in a few minutes. Welcome back, my wonderful, wonderful audience. We're talking with Peter A. McCullough, MD, a supreme internist. He's also got an MPH in public health, cardiologist, widely published. but courageous. We kind of got to know each other pretty early on in this attack, and the courage of this man has been inestimable. Just, Peter, I can't say enough about your courage and determination, your ethics. Amazing.
Well, that's a wonderful compliment coming from you, and I give you great credit, you and Ginger, for getting out, I think, an absolute pivotal book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey, probably the best named book and also the most cited and evidence-based book that we have, particularly the timeline in the back, which I now use on a regular basis for key talking points and interviews. At CPAC, now I'm a political moderate, believe it or not, but I'm an invited stage presenter at CPAC.
That's wonderful.
The Conservative Political Action Committee. I went on TV with Steve Bannon, and Steve Bannon said that these books that are coming out, yours was The Vanguard, but now the one I have, Courage to Face COVID-19, Robert F. Kennedy, The Real Anthony Fauci, and Scott Atlas's book, The Cloud Over the White House. These books now are so evidence-based and they're so clear that Bannon thinks that the books are going to save the day because they can't be whitewashed. His fear is that the electronic media and the mainstream media and social media is so easily manipulated. It's so contrived that, in fact, it never can be used as anything as an evidence base. So your book, particularly that back end, the timeline, the pandemic preparedness events, which lay it out, the ones that were meetings, the ones that generated documents, the ones that were actually filmed. As you've said, it's in the open. It's all in the open. And one of the key entities in your book that you highlight for Americans and people worldwide is the Coalition, or the Center for Epidemic Preparedness and Innovation, CEPI, and how CEPI came together, Gates Foundation, the World Economic Forum, as major players, but then the Wellcome Trust, the governments of Norway and India. This center was formed, and the center says in its business plan, there will be pandemics, and we will prepare for them, and our response will be a singular response, mass vaccination. It's in the open. Yeah. Here we are, SARS-CoV-2, clearly the first operationalization of CEPI in 2017, and now in 2022, monkeypox.
Yeah. And they say, we have this in the book, folks. I took a picture of some couple of these slides where the Gates Group is explaining to the World Health Organization how the pharmaceutical companies that develop all these vaccines will get reimbursed for all their costs, direct and indirect. And can you imagine when the richest man in the world, which he was for many years at that time, the richest man in the world is telling companies, you know, come join with me and we'll all invest and I'm going to make sure you get even your expenses paid. The rest is going to be real gravy. And boy, did he organize a crew of predators. Amazing. Let's get to more information from you, sir. You wanted to talk about monkeypox. I'm sure we all want to know more about monkeypox.
The WHO has actually taken the initiative to declare monkeypox a worldwide emergency. And then last week, the Biden administration announced that monkeypox is a United States medical emergency. And I can tell you, as a practicing doctor, as you are, medical emergencies ought to be visible to us. We ought to see calamities. It's like if there was a weather emergency, the National Weather Service would announce it and we'd be able to see it. If there was a forest fire, the Forest Service would announce an emergency. I can tell you that there is no monkeypox emergency. This is what we know. Monkeypox is in a class of viruses called orthopox viruses. They're double-stranded DNA viruses. It includes smallpox, camelpox, cowpox, and now monkeypox. They're largely zoonoses. They're viral conditions that are passed from animal to human. Monkeypox has been around for decades. and it emanates out of the Congo Basin. There's about 1,000 cases per year, sometimes, you know, more or less, you know, sometimes greatly more. And it's spread from animals, monkeys, but also giant pouch rats in the Congo Basin can pass it to humans. There was an outbreak in 2003 where some giant pouch rats from the Congo were intermixed with some pet prairie dogs, and it spread to about 4 dozen Americans. This is a skin rash. It's a pustular skin rash that occurs on the trunk and the arms and the hands. It's on the hands because people are handling these animals. Well, what happened is in 2021, March of 2021, suspiciously, the nuclear threat.
What's up, Heather?
The world we once knew is collapsing. We're being warned to expect rolling blackouts, and our political leaders are deliberately shutting down pipelines, fuel refineries, nuclear power plants, and energy exploration. The currency is collapsing, while financial assets are plummeting in value, and the global food supply is being deliberately decimated. To survive this war being waged on humanity, you need more than just regular prepping. You need resilient prepping. And that's the title of my new free audiobook, Resilient Prepping. You can download the entire audiobook and a printable PDF transcript for free right now at resilientprepping.com. Resilient Prepping teaches practical strategies for prepping in 3 layers, high-tech, low-tech, and no-tech. Resilient Prepping is your ultimate guide to surviving the total collapse of the world as we know it, because that's exactly what globalists are trying to achieve. Download this entire audiobook for free right now at resilientprepping.com.
Well, as Peter McCullough said, when you have an emergency, you can see it. You don't just make it up the way Tedros does. And I heard a lightning flash coming from outside, I think, Peter's house. And I think he may have lost his power. So now it's me alone for 14 minutes to talk with you. I'll pick up at the start on monkeypox and talk a little bit about that some more. You know, Peter has pointed out that it's not a threat to us. It's something that happens on a fairly regular basis, that it's endemic and in certain countries. And when it first came out, there were no reported deaths outside of Africa. So it was out for days with no deaths at all. And I believe that the effort was made by Fauci, by Tedros, to delay telling people that the real risk here was that it was May and that was a gay pride month, and that sex between men posed a high risk of this. They did not get in touch, as far as I know, with any of the leaders of the gay pride movement to talk to them about what should be done, whether some of these big conferences should be shut down or delayed. And they, the gay pride people, actually, I found communications between them where they were concerned. They were talking, the leaders of the conferences were talking about what to do. And we weren't hearing anything from World Health Organization. And I think, do we have you back, Peter? Nope, but let me finish this sentence. You're on the air. I heard it.
Dallas, Texas, but I'm glad you brought us up to date. I agree, this appears to be contrived, what's happened.
Yep.
And the virus clearly adopted a human-to-human transmission pattern. That's a sexually transmitted disease. And last year in Dallas, there was a case last year, and it was a man who came from Africa. He must have gotten it from an animal. He was on airplanes to Atlanta, Dallas, and he had lots of contact. He didn't spread it to a single one. He wasn't gay or bisexual. He didn't spread it to anybody. And that was published by Rao and colleagues MMWR in the April 2022 edition of the MMWR. So we learned from that case that without a lot of intense sexual contact, this is not going to spread. Now, fast forward, Thornhill and colleagues, New England Journal of Medicine, reported that 98% of cases are in gay and bisexual men, men having sex with men. 95% in transmission is bisexual contact. And 41% of cases have HIV. And in some of these scenarios, the men are having 10 or more sexual contacts in a short period of time. So that's what's happened. This has basically become a sexually transmitted disease. There's about 7,000 suspected cases in the United States. It's easily treated with a drug called TPOXX or Tecovirimat given orally or IV. We had a case at our center recently. The only reason to hospitalize is for, you know, a pain, basically anal pain. There are no deaths in the United States. And what have we heard? We heard that the first move of the Biden administration was to pre-purchase vaccines, the Bavarian Nordic Jynneos vaccine. Well, what do we know about this vaccine? The vaccine, through its development program, about 7,000 study subjects, was approved only on raising surrogate antibodies. Antibodies are found to be a very poor surrogate of whether or not a vaccine can do anything. The vaccine has actually never stopped a case of smallpox. And on top of that, in certain groups, the rate of cardiac injury is astronomical. In the HIV positive group, that rate's 18% in the briefing booklet. That's actually in the prescribing information. And to make matters worse, people have already had the smallpox vaccine, which is largely almost everybody over age 50, yourself and myself included, that if we were to take one of these vaccines, we would face a heightened risk of cardiac damage. So I can tell you the CEPI plan to mass vaccinate out of every problem is turning out to be a disaster.
Yeah, well put. Illustrating the grandiosity and arrogance of Tedros, who is, again, he's the Secretary General of the World Health Organization, which, folks, is an agency of the UN. So it's all part of that collectivistic communist viewpoint. And it's very much under the combined influences, the World Health Organization, of the what I call the Western Empire, which is Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab, and the Eastern Empire, which is communist China. They literally are responsible for Tedros, who's a communist, outright communist, being not a doctor, being the only non-physician ever appointed to the position of the Surgeon General. He was just such a perfect communist thug that they put him there. But Tedros announced to the newspapers that he had asked his committee, this is his WHO committee, to approve of declaring an emergency for monkeypox. And he announced that it was deadlocked. So he broke the deadlock by determining that, yes, there would be an announcement. And when I looked up just how deadlocked were they were 9-6 against him. So they had a clear majority against him. He's calling it a deadlock, and he breaks the deadlock. These people know no restraint. We have to restrain them. And we have to be very, very vigilant about the degree to which the people who are handling Joe Biden want to make Tedros into the dictator of global health threats so that he can move in on any country, as Dr. McCullough mentioned earlier. It's probably the biggest immediate threat to our sovereignty is that, and to the formation of a global health dynamo of hegemony, of huge power, is the Biden administration's wanting to sign a treaty next or an agreement with them to give them that power, even though they had to back down after so many of us, including African nations, were attacking them on their amendments. They can still sign the agreement. That could happen any time.
I completely agree. I don't think we've heard the end of the World Health Organization and really the World Economic Forum. They're closely aligned in their mission to establish a new world order through the mechanism of declaring health emergencies. The question is, what's going to be next? You know, there's already talk of the Biden administration declaring a climate emergency.
Yeah.
A climate emergency. And again, this gives unprecedented power without checks and balances. One of the great concerns here is that treasuries are being drained dry. Mm-hmm. With the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, 10% of our GDP was just printed and spent, and it sent us into skyrocketing inflation. This is a recipe for disaster for America. If we don't get some fiscal restraint quickly on this process, we need to actually stop declaring emergencies, and we need to declare them closed. The crises are closed. In 1976, we actually had an Emergency Declarations Act in the United States. And the reason why the act was written was not to be able to declare emergencies. It was actually a mechanism to stop them, to actually close them. And, we have about 4 dozen national emergencies declared. Most of them actually have to do with placing sanctions on one country or another, trade sanctions, for instance, sanctions on Russia or Iraq, what have you. But these health emergencies cannot grow into these open-ended, never-ending emergencies, even when there's no emergency. You know, when people are back at restaurants and businesses are open and schools are open and everybody's back to normal life, the emergency is long over with. I've always said for SARS-CoV-2, legitimately, the emergency was over with in January of 2021. We had basically a year of this. The hospitals built capacity. We were on the downslope of the big alpha curve. I had already testified in the U.S. Senate, bringing the message to Americans that we can treat this illness, that it doesn't have to result in hospitalization and death. The crisis was closed. And since that time, we've easily managed our way. The only people being hospitalized with SARS-CoV-2 are those who were denied early treatment. 201, I just had on my podcast, a nurse, very experienced. She had seen hundreds and hundreds of patients. She created a nationwide network, and she agrees. Hospitalization and death in SARS-CoV-2 is a product of the lack of treatment. If we ever have a death with monkeypox, or if we ever have disfigurement or a problem, it's going to be because of lack of treatment, not because of vaccines.
Yeah. Well, we have about a little more than 4 minutes left. You're an incredibly busy man. What's been the most fun thing you've done lately? I've never asked anybody that. You're so busy. Have you been having fun? Did you do anything recently that was just really exciting?
You know, I had the first vacation planned with my wife in 3 years. I haven't taken a day off since the pandemic started. And yeah, I've had a transition of jobs. And I've very much evolved from a practicing physician. You know, I was like you, I was pretty well known in my field. Prior to COVID, I had already lectured at the FDA Congressional Oversight Panel, at the European Medicine Agencies. I lectured at the New York Academy of Sciences. I was the named endowed lecturer at Harvard in 2 divisions in 2018. So I was already a physician of note, but I wasn't a public figure on the major media. Mm-hmm. And to me, the biggest transformation was the fact that, you know, almost every night I was on call for Fox News or Newsmax or OAN or Real America. I've been on ABC. I've been on all the shows like you. I transformed into like a Peter Bregan, but not for psychiatry or for the disaster of the antidepressive drugs. It really had to deal with SARS-CoV-2. And then what happened over time is people started to look at me as an advocate for civil liberties. And when I gave my speech on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, it was a 7-minute speech. It's actually the final chapter in our book, Courage to Face COVID-19, which is on your banner right now. You know, it was clear that a doctor, a practicing doctor, became the advocate for Americans in terms of preservation of civil liberties, these Absolutely. Important circles of medical freedom, social freedom, and economic freedom. So I was going to go to Italy for the first vacation in years. And sadly, that day, my wife's father passed away. He was in our house, 98 years old. He's at the end of his life. And he had the most peaceful, painless death I had ever witnessed as a medical doctor. And I can tell you, it was a time of sadness that his life had ended, but also of great happiness that that he's in a better place right now. So we canceled our trip. My wife right now is actually in the Middle East overseeing his burial back where he was born in Israel. And it's been, it's really been a whirlwind for us. But probably the most enjoyable thing, Dr. Bragan, is meeting great people like you and Ginger. I've met so many heroes, medical heroes, scientists. There's some wonderful people in the media. It's pretty clear that we're on an odyssey, that we are basically alive at the time of a great controversy.
Yes.
And we're honored that we're playing a role in the closure of that controversy, as difficult as it is.
And everyone listening to us can find a way to be a part of that great controversy. There's so much needed volunteers to learn how to watch, what do they call it, police or whatever it is, the voting areas, people to go to the school boards about all the awful things being taught our children is beyond belief, people to have book clubs, people to do volunteer work at political groups you believe in, and I hope they'll be patriotic, freedom-loving groups, and maybe even God-fearing, but that's not required. God's there anyway, I think. But there's just a lot to do, and you'll meet people who are just wonderful, and then you can go to conferences, meet Peter McCullough. All you'll do is see me on a big video screen, because I was told by doctors before COVID to stop traveling, that I was just getting glitchy when I traveled. And I have been glitchy since. I recovered from the glitches. I'm in very, very good health. But I stopped traveling, decided no more glitches. And that's been a blessing, real blessing. But you'll just meet all these wonderful individuals, and really, really improve the richness of your life. And if you're feeling lonely, and get out there and meet folks. I think we are running way over. God bless you, Peter McCullough. Thank you, our wonderful, wonderful audience.